This episode is sponsored by Sweet Life Nutritionals. If you're looking for the absolute best supplements created by yours truly, Dr. Brian Mole, our products contain the highest quality ingredients and the formulas are evidence-based and backed by science. For blood sugar, metabolism, gut support, adrenal health, and detoxification, visit sweetlifenutritionals.com and use the coupon code PODCAST to save 10% off your first order. Welcome to the new Mastering Blood Sugar podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Mole, and each and every week, I bring you cutting-edge information, transformational stories, and exclusive interviews with the leading experts in the area of blood sugar, diabetes, and metabolism. My goal is to cut through the confusion by making complex concepts simple and to give you practical strategies to improve your blood sugar and optimize your metabolic health. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you enjoy this next episode of the Mastering Blood Sugar podcast. All right, so here with my good friend David Jockers, Dr. Jockers, who has a great practice down in outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and is a ketogenic diet expert. And we're going to talk all about ketogenic diet and blood sugar and diabetes. So, Doc, welcome back, and great to be with you here today.
Well, thanks so much, Dr. Mole. I always enjoy the content you put out, and you're really creating a new shape for diabetes. We know it's an epidemic, and you have a great voice and a great message. You're helping so many people, so glad to be a part of it.
Thanks, and yeah, a ketogenic diet has kind of hit now the mainstream, and it's become sort of trendy and popular, but you know, you and I, you've been coming on and talking about ketogenic diet for years and the value, and so hopefully if you've been following this program for more than this year, you've seen Dr. Jockers on and heard him talk about it. But you know, we're going to shed maybe some new insights a little bit about some of the you know, what we're currently learning about ketogenic diet and blood sugar control and diabetes. So again, excited to dive back into this topic with you.
Yeah, I think it was like 2013 or 2014 when you did your first one. And
that's right.
How many people knew about the ketogenic diet back then? You know, really was a new concept. We talked all about it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. So I guess let's start with that. Like how have things changed, and you know, what have we learned? What have you learned in particular focusing on this over the past couple of years? Is there anything new? You know, from working with more and more people, doing some great summits yourself, what are some of the newer insights that you've picked up about this type of eating approach?
Yeah, so just for the listeners, I mean, a ketogenic diet is a very low carb, high fat, moderate protein diet. So we take out the sugars, grains, all the higher carbohydrate foods, even fruit and even starches like sweet potatoes, carrots, things like that. We take those out. We replace those calories with healthy fats like avocados and olives and olive oil and butter. And of course, we recommend grass-fed, pasture-raised meats and pasture-raised dairy and things like that, coconut oil. So we're replacing those calories with the healthy fats. And what we do is we teach the body to become a fat burner. So by taking in these fats, the body has to get good at burning fat. And that includes your own body fat. And the cool thing about using fat for fuel is it's very satiating, meaning that it gets rid of hunger and cravings. You eat it and then you're not hungry. In fact, most people realize within a few days of starting this diet that their cravings go away, that they're able to go longer periods of time without food, and they don't really think about food. And what happens when we do that is our insulin levels start to drop. And of course, you know, if you're a diabetic or interested in diabetes, you've heard of insulin. So insulin is this amazing hormone that helps take sugar out of the bloodstream, puts it into the cells. And we need insulin. It's absolutely critical. However, if we have too much insulin, it's going to promote inflammation, fat storage, you know, it's going to cause a lot of problems in the body. And so we want to get that insulin level down into a normal, optimal level. And a ketogenic diet really, really helps with that. And the cool thing is lots of research coming out, not only on the therapeutic benefits of ketones. So when our body starts to break down these fatty acids for fuel, fat itself, fatty acids can't fuel the brain. They have to turn into another molecule, water-soluble molecule called ketones, that can cross through the blood-brain barrier and fuel the brain. So if you can't, if your body's not good at producing these ketones and your blood sugar goes down because maybe you've taken a while between meals, maybe you're fasting for 16 hours or something, if you're not producing the ketones, you're going to get hypoglycemic types of responses. You might get irritable, you might be shaky, heart palpitations, you might be sweating, feeling dizzy, you could even pass out. So the body actually creates these ketones to get up through the blood-brain barrier and fuel the brain. And what we know is that the brain runs really, really well off these ketones. In fact, the ketones reduce inflammation in the brain. They actually turn on, they're called epigenetic influencers, where they turn on positive genetic traits within our brain. So they actually turn on genes within cells that help keep inflammation under control. These genes help promote lower levels of oxidative stress. They promote optimal levels of neurotransmitter production. So it just really helps us feel balanced. We don't have the anxiety. We're able to concentrate at a really high level. And we also turn back, in a sense, it helps us reverse chronic disease process. And we know that, like Alzheimer's disease, for example, neurodegenerative conditions like that, Alzheimer's is called type 3 diabetes because it's marked by insulin resistance in the brain. So ketones can have a therapeutic effect on that by modulating the genes, reducing inflammation, improving insulin sensitivity. So a lot of great benefit to that. And then, of course, you know, just like I was saying, when we have these ketones elevated, we're going to have more satiety. We're not going to have the hunger, the cravings, and therefore we're able to go longer times without food. And there's a lot of research coming out on fasting and going a longer period of time without eating and how it actually triggers something called cellular autophagy, where the body actually cleanses the cells from the inside out. It's like recycling. So our body itself, when we're in times where we don't have much nutrients because we haven't eaten in a while, will actually go in and break down the old decaying cells and cellular organelles. So we have like mitochondria within our cells, and we have these things called endoplasmic reticulum, and they all have really important functions. Mitochondria produce energy within cells. Endoplasmic reticulum play a role with producing DNA, RNA strands, and creating proteins for that. And so when these are damaged, the cell can't function well. We can't produce energy well. So the body itself will say, okay, I need more nutrients. So it will go in and will break down old mitochondria that are not functioning well, diseased mitochondria, reuse the parts and create something new, a very new, healthy, really robust mitochondria. It's super cool. It's like, you know, basically taking old plastic that's been used and creating something new, you know, that we can now, you know, use with that. So basically the body is taking worn out cells and recreating new cells. And so fasting and the ketogenic diet, or getting into ketosis, really powerful ways to reverse the disease process in the body, to help our body become more biologically younger. So you may be 60 years old, but biologically, when you start practicing healthy lifestyle habits like this, you can have a biological function of, you know, a 35-year-old at 60, because your body is regenerating itself on a regular basis. And so that's some of the new stuff that's been coming out, and even extended fasting, which for a type 2 diabetic right off the bat, I don't recommend, but has been shown to stimulate stem cells, which can be really promising. In fact, a lot of people are starting now to talk about type 1 diabetes and the ability to basically stimulate our body's own natural stem cells and how that could actually reverse type 1 diabetes. A lot of research needs to be done on that, but the early reports are promising.
Wow, very cool. So you were talking about two different things, and I'm sure most people gathered this, but I just want to reiterate. So you're talking about fasting that has certain benefits. You were talking about ketogenic diet and blood ketones, which provide other benefits. And we can get into both of those in a little bit more detail. But I think one of the things that they both do is they both tend to reduce circulating insulin. And I think that's really important because most people with prediabetes and even type 2 diabetes and even metabolic syndrome and blood sugar dysregulation, most of them have issues with insulin signaling and the communication between insulin and the cell, which ultimately leads to insulin resistance and hyperinsulinemia, which means there's too much insulin in the blood. And insulin does a couple of things. Insulin stops us from being able to properly oxidize or utilize fat. In the presence of insulin, it becomes very, very difficult to metabolize fat properly. It also shuts down the production of ketones. It's an inhibitor to ketogenesis. So it shuts down when you have too much insulin, you're not producing these ketones. And we just talked about all the benefits of having circulating ketones in the body. And like begets like, you know, when you have too much insulin in the blood, your insulin receptors start to become blunted, you become even more insulin resistant, and then you're not able to properly use glucose either. So you're not metabolizing fat properly, your blood sugar's going up, you're gaining weight, and you don't get the benefits of having these ketones circulating in your blood. So I think some of the things you mentioned there, fasting and doing a ketogenic style diet, can both reduce insulin. I think that's really valuable.
Yeah, it's powerful. And the other thing about insulin is that it actually activates pro-inflammatory gene pathways. So it helps activate something called the inflammasome, which is like an amplifier for inflammation, telling the whole body, promote inflammation. It's interesting why that is because, see, when our ancestors, really anytime we eat, we're going to take in microbes. Okay, so like we eat something, even if it's, you know, been sterilized or cooked, there's microbes on that food. And so the body, we know that systemic infections have killed more people in the history of mankind than anything else. So like basically an infection getting into our bloodstream, you think about things like the bubonic plague, right? So infection that got in, spread wildly throughout the body, killed, you know, half the known world. So the body is adapted to create something called inflammation to protect against that. When we eat food, it's actually, even though we need to eat, believe it or not, it's actually somewhat of a threat to our survival when we eat because there's these microbes. So what the body does is it starts to turn up some inflammation when we consume food to just prevent against any sort of microbes and things like endotoxin, microbial debris from getting into the bloodstream and, you know, basically taking over. So when we are eating higher carbohydrate foods, things that are going to really stoke insulin or just eating very often throughout the day, we are constantly triggering those inflammatory pathways. And basically that's going to create almost like a siren or a huge alarm going off throughout a whole city. It's basically telling every system of the body, inflammation, we're under threat. And that's the problem with high circulating insulin. It's one of the big issues. Is we got to turn down that inflammation and allow the body to start responding to those messages, become more sensitive to those messages. And that's really where a ketogenic diet, exercise, good sleeping habits, fasting, these things can be really powerful to do that, to turn down the insulin dial.
Yeah, for sure. So you talked earlier about ketones and some of the benefits of having circulating ketones like beta-hydroxybutyrate in the bloodstream. Can you describe how this sort of cycle of how we get into ketosis and whether or not sort of like the average person eating the standard American diet ever goes into any level of ketosis and sort of what the scale is of different levels of you know, nutritional ketosis and kind of where the benefits lie?
Absolutely. So basically right now we consider nutritional ketosis when your blood ketone levels are at 0.5 millimoles or higher. Some people say it's 1.0, somewhere in that range. The average individual eating a standard American diet may get up to 0.1 millimoles. And that's only if like they take a long time between their dinner and their breakfast. As we start to do intermittent fasting, those ketone levels are going to go up a little bit. Okay. Like you could eat really bad food, but only eat one meal a day and your body will start producing some ketones at a higher level, possibly even getting into nutritional ketosis. So it's not the ideal way to do it. We want to eat nutrient dense foods, but spacing out meals is one element, one way that you can get these ketones up. So 0.5 millimoles is basically when your body's in nutritional ketosis. Now, for therapeutic benefits, especially in the early phases, you may see that your levels are going to get up a little bit higher, right? One, two, as your body gets better at utilizing ketones, sometimes those levels can drop down because your body's using the ketones as fast as it's producing them. And I want to differentiate between urine ketones, because a lot of times people will get the urine ketone sticks because they're really cheap. Okay. So typically, you know, they're very, very inexpensive. You can get them at a drugstore. Testing your ketones via urine is really only good maybe the first week or two when you're transitioning into a ketogenic diet. It just tells you that your body's producing ketones. However, the form of ketones is acetoacetic acid. It doesn't tell you how you're using them. In fact, if you're peeing out really high ketones and you're eating meals every day, okay, several weeks into a ketogenic diet, it tells me that you're actually not efficiently using the ketones, because as you start to use these things for energy, you're going to have less in the urine. So the best measurement is going to be through blood. So that's kind of the gold standard. You can get something called a keto mojo, okay, which is, you know, definitely the best priced blood ketone, blood glucose monitor on the market. It gets like 99 cents a strip for ketones, which is a lot better than some of the other brands, which are more like $3 or $4 a strip. And very inexpensive for blood glucose too. So you can test your glucose and your ketones with the Keto Mojo. Just go to there, just look that up on Google, Keto Mojo. So you get one of those, or you can get a breath meter. Okay. So there are things like the Ketonics. There's another one called the Level. So these are things you can breathe into, and your body, when you're burning fat for fuel, you will produce one of the ketone bodies, acetone, and you'll actually exhale that. So that's also a really good measurement of fat burning, especially it's something that's obviously you can be testing throughout the day without pricking your blood, and it's a one-time expense. So these machines are more expensive up front, but you're not constantly, you know, having to put more money into it to buy more strips. So, and they hook into your software on your computer and your iPhone and things like that, so you can kind of monitor where you're at. So these are ways that you can test. And I do recommend testing in the early phases, especially if you are somebody that's like a type 2 diabetic, somebody that's trying to manage a disease condition, really a good idea to test. Over time, as you are testing, you're gonna notice this kind of biofeedback response where you know how you feel when you have a certain level of ketones in your blood. And you just feel really good. You're able to go long periods of time without food and feel very mentally sharp, very energetic. So normally, if you were to go 16, 18, 20 hours without food, if you did not have elevated blood ketones, you would feel dizzy. You would feel hungry, irritable, maybe nauseous. You may not be hungry. You may feel nauseous. You just would not feel good. You feel fatigued. You may have anxiety, heart palpitations, all these unwanted responses because your body's going into panic mode because the brain doesn't have enough sugar. However, if you feel good after 16, 18, 20, 24 hours without food, somewhere in that range, it's because your body's produced these ketones and your brain is getting all the fuel that it needs. Your blood glucose would be lower, yet you feel really good. And so that's, you'll start to know how you feel over time as you're testing. But in general, that's what we're looking for, is get those blood ketones somewhere between 0.5 and, you know, typically if you're not doing an extended fast, you're probably the highest you're going to see is about 3.5 or so. You shouldn't see higher than that. Diabetic ketoacidosis, which is a pathological state, is different than nutritional ketosis, because that is when the ketones are really high, like over 15 millimoles. So again, we're looking in that range of 0.5 to maybe up to 3.5. So it's not a disease state. You're not in trouble unless it's like up over 15. And what you'll also have with diabetic ketoacidosis is really high blood sugar. because your body is so insulin resistant, it can't get sugar or the ketones into the cell for to fuel it. Your body's just producing massive amounts of ketones, and that could be a serious condition. However, nutritional ketosis is elevated ketones, but mildly elevated, and lower blood sugar. So your blood sugar is going to be like 80, right? Maybe lower. It could be in the 50s, right? But yet you feel good. In the morning, it tends to be a little bit higher. So if it's, 100 in the morning, I wouldn't panic. Okay. If you feel good, your blood ketones, are over 0.5, don't panic. Okay. It will come down as the day goes on. It's kind of normal dawn phenomena where you have elevated stress hormones in the morning to wake you up. Gives you a little more energy in the morning, and it will also elevate your blood sugar a little bit in the morning, but it will come down as the day goes on. Whereas with ketoacidosis, you have very high blood sugar, like 200, 300, and really high ketones, over 10, 15, sometimes 20 in that range. And that can be really, really troublesome.
Hey, it's Dr. Brian Mohl. I wanted to take just a second to thank you for listening to this episode of the Mastering Blood Sugar podcast. If you're enjoying the show and you want to support the creation of this content, then consider making a small contribution by buying me a coffee. To show your support for the show, just go to buymeacoffee.com/Dr. Mohl, and you can buy me a cup of coffee or two there as a way of saying thanks for putting out this content and bringing you some of the leading experts in the field of blood sugar and metabolic health. Thanks for your support, and let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and just a quick word of caution. There's a diabetes drug, a new class of drugs called SGLT2 inhibitors, and Dr. Eric Westman passed this along to me, but there's a known side effect with those medications in some people of causing ketoacidosis. They act on the kidneys. And you have to be a little bit more cautious if you're taking one of those medications and doing a ketogenic diet, because there have been cases of people doing a ketogenic diet while taking those medications and going into a ketoacidosis at a higher rate. Because of the way they sort of, interfere with the natural body processes, and the way they act on the kidneys, they sort of artificially pull the blood sugar down. But so it doesn't seem like you have high blood sugar when you could be producing ketones at a higher than normal rate. So just be careful with that. If you're taking one of those medications, you just want to make sure you're working with a doctor who knows what they're doing, and who can help you monitor your ketone levels and make sure you don't drive yourself into a dangerous situation. I totally agree with what you said there. And, with ketoacidosis, first of all, we don't see it very often in type 2 diabetics. It's more common in type 1 because they don't make insulin. So if they sort of forget to use insulin or don't take their shot, remember I said earlier that insulin suppresses ketogenesis. So most people with type 2 diabetes have elevated insulin levels. And so, they're just trying to get their insulin down to a normal level if possible. So it doesn't happen very often in people with type 2 diabetes, and certainly not with prediabetes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you talked about the benefits of ketones. You mentioned that sometimes if you start this type of a program and you feel negative symptoms, dizziness or, nausea, or you feel tired or off and so forth, that it's a sign that maybe you're not producing ketones. Is that, sometimes you hear about the keto flu. Is that what the keto flu is, or is that something different?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically the keto flu is this transition period. Because when you're so used to running off of sugar or glucose, your body has a big transition to run off of fat and ketones. And sometimes it can take a week or two, right? Sometimes it can take, almost a month for some individuals. And so big keys with that, making sure you're staying well hydrated, making sure you're actually taking more salts in. This is counterintuitive to what people learn. Most people hear you need to be on a low salt diet because salt elevates your blood pressure. And that's true if you're on a high carbohydrate diet. See, when you have high insulin, because again, you're eating higher carbohydrates like the standard American diet, or even, you know, the diet that the American Diabetes Association recommends. What happens there is you have high insulin. So insulin helps you retain sodium. When your insulin drops because you're on a ketogenic diet, now you actually excrete more sodium. And so you need the electrolytes, you need salts. So taking a little bit of salts, whether just a pinch on your tongue and then drinking some water can make a big difference. Also salting your foods well. You don't need to oversalt, just salting your foods to a preferred flavor is really good. I also recommend a lot of trace mineral rich foods when you're consuming food, things like bone broth and sea vegetable, like kelp and nori and dulce and things like that. Wild caught fish, wild caught salmon and tuna and things like that can be helpful. Sardines, olives, olive oil. These are great foods. Avocados, dark green leafy vegetables, grass-fed organic animal products. These things are all very trace mineral rich. Cucumbers, celery. These are foods that we want to be consuming on the diet so we can get the electrolytes that we need. And I think that's a really important thing. And then the other thing to remember is that when our body's going through this metabolic switch, it is a stressor. Even though it's healthy for the body, it's a stressor on the body. When you think about like exercise, I think all of us have experienced it where we've taken time away from exercise. And then we went and we were like, okay, I'm going to get a really good workout in today. We worked out and we were really sore. We noticed our energy wasn't as good, our strength wasn't as good. And then we were sore afterwards. And if we based our whole experience off of, you know, that one experience, if we based all exercise off that one experience, we'd probably say exercise isn't healthy. But we know that over time, the body's going to adapt. You're going to get stronger, more fit. The delayed onset muscle soreness you experience reduces, and your body gets more resilient to stress. Well, it's the same thing with going through the ketogenic adaptation. In the beginning, it's not necessarily going to be comfortable, but over time, as long as you're doing the right things, your body's going to adapt. You are going to get stronger, more resilient. You're going to get keto adapted. And that's like the promised land. You know, it's like you just feel great when you are in that keto adaptation phase. And the whole time, your body, you're actually reducing chronic disease, reducing inflammation, allowing tissues and cells to heal and repair, and reducing that biological age. So it's a worthwhile venture. But in the beginning, there are a lot of things you want to do. We talked about the electrolytes, making sure you're really focusing on good sleep, keeping your stress levels down in general, getting out and moving, going out and taking walks, getting out in nature as much as possible can be really helpful for basically helping your body adapt faster.
When does someone know if they should use exogenous ketones? Yeah. You talked about some of the benefits of ketones. So can they benefit anyone? Is there a greater benefit to, you know, endogenously produced ketones versus ones that you might take? And, you know, when should we consider maybe supplementing the diet with some exogenous ketones?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a really great question. Exogenous ketones are basically, they're made in a lab, but they are ketone compounds that mimic what our body makes, beta-hydroxybutyrate that our body makes and runs off of. And exogenous ketones, where they can be advantageous is in that adaptation stage. By getting ketones into your bloodstream right away before your body's good at producing them endogenously, your body starts to recognize, okay, I've got this ketone molecule. I need to get better at using this for fuel. So it's saying, okay, well, my sugar's going down. I haven't eaten. My blood sugar's going down, but I've got this alternative fuel. I can use this as an energy source, keeps you, helps you be more energetic, more mentally clear. And at the same time, you're initiating the adaptation process where your body gets good at utilizing these ketones much quicker. So that adaptation phase, great time to use exogenous ketones. In general, obviously, we want to get the body using the or producing its own ketones and using them very effectively. But the adaptation phase, I see it being very effective. Other times where it can be effective are if you are, you know, going to come off of the diet, actually taking some ketones. Let's say you're at a party, you're like, okay, I already know I'm going to eat the cake, right? I'm going to eat all the sugar. Actually taking, even though I don't necessarily endorse doing this on a regular basis, taking the ketones before you do that will reduce cravings, hunger. You just won't have the desire to consume as much sugar, and you'll get less of an inflammatory response when you are consuming that sugar. And I think that's really beneficial. So it can help somebody as they're going through that. And it's also really helpful for just reducing cravings in general. Also, athletes can use it like before a workout, after a workout. Oftentimes what I'll do is I'll use exogenous ketones and branched chain amino acids after my workout. So even though my body's producing ketones, I do that because in a sense, I'm just actually adding a little bit more fuel to the fire, getting those ketones in. And I notice that it's easier for me to go longer after my workout, even though I might have fasted for 18 hours, I can easily go longer without, without eating if I wanted to, or if I do eat, cause I do a lot of fasting. If I do eat, I just, I don't feel the desire to overeat, which has been an issue in the past when I'm only eating one or two meals. Sometimes I eat too much and I feel a little bit bloated. When I take the exogenous ketones after the workout, I notice that that goes down. The amino acid's really good for my muscle cells and for helping me adapt and recover from the workout. So that's where it can be advantageous. People that are doing like long distance training, getting those ketones in their system. Like if I was a basketball player or soccer player and I'm doing 2-3 hour practices, NFL, you know, I would definitely be drinking ketones with amino acids and electrolytes during the workouts or during the practice sessions, because I'd want to be able to be fueled at a really high level. And the cool thing is when you're running off of ketones, you need less oxygen. So you're able to do the same amount of work in the practice session, but you're not as oxygen deprived, right? So you're not breathing as heavy, and that actually creates more energy efficiency for you, and you're able to do more, and you actually notice improved performance. So a lot of good benefits there.
Very cool. There are a few things that I commonly hear from detractors. One is that a ketogenic diet is not safe long-term, that if someone has a thyroid issue, or even if they don't, it can suppress thyroid activity and maybe even cause hypothyroidism. And then the other one I hear often is that it leads to insulin resistance. Can you just give your sort of quick rebuttals to those?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is some half-truth in some of those. So basically when it comes to insulin resistance, that's just not true. Basically it helps improve insulin sensitivity by keeping insulin down. So your body becomes very sensitive to the insulin that it is making. Now, when it comes to thyroid, there are several different classifications of individuals. And there are some individuals that already have fairly low insulin. Okay. And so if you're somebody that's tends to be a hypo producer of insulin to begin with, oftentimes you just deal with a lot of hypoglycemic type issues. And these individuals are typically, although not always, are typically very thin, very lean, don't have a lot of muscle mass. Okay. And these individuals, we need insulin in order to convert T4, which is your inactive thyroid hormone, to active T3. So if we go on a ketogenic diet with somebody like this and we suppress that insulin too much, we can get a downregulation there. So some individuals need to go in and out of ketosis, all right, where they are in ketosis maybe for a day or two and then out of ketosis with, you know, having a good feast meal where they may consume a higher amount of carbohydrates. And we call it diet variation or feast famine cycling, where the body goes through periods of time when we're under consuming calories, possibly through a ketogenic diet or through intermittent fasting. And then also times where we are consuming a lot, okay, and getting that insulin bump that we need. Now, individuals, most people that are listening to this that are interested in diabetes prevention or overcoming their diabetes, you're typically a hyper producer of insulin. So you're usually producing a lot of insulin. So in your case, most likely, of course, it's always a good idea to work with your practitioner, a functional practitioner that understands the ins and outs of the ketogenic diet, but most likely going on this sort of a nutrition plan is going to be extremely therapeutic for you, because we're going to get that insulin down. We're going to get the blood sugar, the insulin down where it should be. You're going to feel really good. You're going to lose a lot of weight if you're overweight. You're going to reduce inflammation. You're going to feel more mentally clear. And I see a lot of people be able to come off of their diabetes medication and really have no remaining signs of diabetes, like literally reverse the condition. And I know you've seen that too, Dr. Brian. And so, you know, every individual is different. So there's no like cookie cutter program that's going to work for everybody. And that's part of the key is just personalizing, individualizing the plan. But for most people that are interested in diabetes, okay, ketogenic diet is a great starting place. And then as far as adding in a feast day every now and then, you know, for some individuals, they're going to respond better with that. Other individuals, it can totally throw them off, okay, because they're so insulin resistant. So again, a personalized approach is the most important thing. As far as long-term benefits to being in ketosis, you know, I think there's an incredible amount of long-term benefits, particularly people who have that tendency to be insulin resistant. Okay, those individuals probably should stay in ketosis, you know, year round. Whereas other individuals might need to cycle in and out, more ancestral approach, where we're cycling in and out based on, you know, where our normal fasting insulin levels are and how our body's responding best to the stressors we're putting on it.
Yeah, makes total sense. Well, fantastic. This has been awesome as always. So I want to finish up with three questions that I'd like to ask all my guests. Before I do that, I'd love to give you a chance to share your information and how people can find out more about what you're doing. So if you want to just maybe mention your website and what people can find there, and if there's any other good resources that you have for people.
Yeah, sure. My website's drjockers.com. Really popular site. We have tons of great articles. We have over 1 million unique visitors every month. So it's really, really cool. Lots of people checking out our stuff. I'm also on YouTube doing videos and, you know, really just trying to provide the world's best content when it comes to ketogenic diet, fasting, overcoming chronic diseases, diabetes, things like that. So so you can check it out there.
Okay, YouTube. And is that just Dr.
Yeah, Jockers? Dr. David Jockers, Facebook, Dr. David Jockers. Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right. So three questions. First, is there a like a quote or a thought or maybe an idea that you really want to kind of leave people with today? Maybe something that, you know, really characterizes your work or the impression that you want to kind of get across through, you know, your mission of what you're trying to do?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think in general, when it comes to our physiological health, you got to remember that stress can make us stronger, but we need a good balanced approach, right? And so engaging in things like, you know, diet changes, fasting, things like that, and just kind of embracing the fact that it's not necessarily comfortable, okay, but actually getting uncomfortable will help get us stronger and more resilient. And ultimately, as a human being, we want to be the most stress-resilient human being we can possibly be. So for me, I do things like take, you know, cold showers and go in my infrared sauna and work out at a really high intensity. And I do intermittent fasting and also some extended fasting, things like that. They're mild stressors on the body, and then they create a more resilient body, a more resilient cellular structure. And I think if you take that approach, you know, and doing it wisely with where you're at, you know, you'll see incredible health changes.
Absolutely. Yeah. In naturopathic medicine, they call that hardening. And I love that concept, the hormesis concept of using stress to strengthen us. So that's great. Next question is there maybe a book that you've read that you feel like really changed your life? And it could have been a long time ago, it could have been recent, or perhaps changed maybe the direction of your practice or taught you something that you're really teaching others now.
You know, a really great book that I'm reading right now, and this is more mental, psychological, and spiritual health. It's called The Way of the Warrior. Trying to think of the name of the Edwin McManus is the author of that. And it's just a really great book. And one of the big takeaways is that we really need to be fighting for peace. So often in our relationships, we're fighting to be understood. Like my wife and I will have a dispute and it's like, we each want our part to be understood. And we're fighting so hard to be understood by the other person that we actually create tension in our relationship. instead of fighting for peace and saying, you know what, I'm gonna make a stand here. I'm gonna fight for peace. My desire to be understood is gonna be secondary to my fight for peace. And it's just kind of getting our ego out of the way and realizing what's our mutual goal. Really, our mutual goal is peace in every relationship. All of us crave peace. We just don't really go in with that idea, with that game plan. Instead, we're instead led by the flesh or led by our ego, which says, I need to be understood. Everybody needs to understand me and my point of view and my opinion. My opinion is what matters. And when we go in with that perspective, we're actually just going to create a lot of problems, hurt a lot of relationships, and be unhappy.
Very cool. Last question is, if you had maybe a friend or family member that came to you who was newly diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and you know, not professionally, but more as a friend personally, maybe at a family get together, or gathering party, something, and just asked for your best advice on what they should do in 1 or 2 minutes. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I would say reduce the amount of times that you're eating in a day and focus on drinking more water. See, we are bioelectric beings, meaning that we can produce tremendous amount of energy through water and electrolytes. And we don't actually eat for energy. When we consume food, we're really eating for building blocks, for cellular repair, for adaptation and recovery. But for energy, water and electrolytes will give you incredible energy. And everybody's experienced eating a big meal like Thanksgiving, and then we want to take a nap. So we take in all this potential energy, but we feel tired. Yet when you actually fast and you get good at it, you hydrate your body well. And that's where most people who've had a bad experience with fasting don't do well. Like, you wake up in the morning, finish your dinner by 6, wake up tomorrow morning and drink 16 to 32 ounces of water with like a pinch of salt, maybe some lemon in there if you want to in your water, before you even think about eating. And what you'll notice is that you actually have less of an appetite. You feel really energized. Your brain feels really good. Okay. And if you do that, you'll notice a big difference in your life and your health. And that's really simple, easy things, and actually saves you money.
Perfect. Dr. David Jockers, thank you so much for being on with us again today. Really appreciate your time and all your wisdom.
Thanks so much, Dr. Brian. Always a privilege and an honor to be on with you.
Dr. Jockers, that's DrJockers. Check him out, drjockers.com. And Doc, again, appreciate it. For all of you who are tuning in and watching, thanks for being part of this program. And we'll see you back next time with another expert interview. All right. Thanks again for joining the Mastering Blood Sugar podcast. Hey, if you haven't already, please do me a favor and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Podcasts. If you want more helpful information, check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/Dr. Brian Moll. And make sure you follow me on Instagram at Dr. Moll. If you like this episode, share it with a friend or family member who could really benefit. And I'd love if you would leave me a 5-star review on iTunes or Google Podcasts. Thanks again for listening. This is Dr. Brian Moll, and I'll see you back on the next episode of Mastering Blood Sugar.